Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Good afternoon. This is Amuse News. I'm your host, RJ. We are live back in the studio today, back in the other studio. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, which was really fun. And I hope you get to check out that conversation with Elizabeth. And for those of you who are interested in seeing this stream live, I have finally figured out a way to do this live on camera from Roberta's. So I think next week I'm gonna come at you live from Roberta's. But thank you for tuning in. As always, we have a really fun conversation today. Alex Ketchum is going to join us to talk about a conference that's happening, a food-related conference that I think will be really interesting to everybody. So hang on for that. I do want to just quickly give a shout-out. I mentioned this yesterday, but I wanted to give another plug to a show that we are launching a new season of, which is called Culture and Flavor. Zella Palmer is the host of that. She is exploring Black and Indigenous foodways, and talking with folks from the South and people who have kind of an overlap between food and culture. She had the most recent episode was an interview with Clancy Miller, who wrote a book called For the Culture: Phenomenal Black Women and Femmes in Food, which is really cool. But this is Zella's second season of the show Culture and Flavor, and I hope everybody checks it out. I have a quick story I wanted to share. I was reading something earlier about Heineken using AI to basically like enhance its market research capabilities. I feel like all the AI talk that I hear anyway is about, you know, ChatGPT and making it do funny things. But apparently there is a tech platform called Stravito, and they are helping an AI assistant that helps food and beverage companies gain better access to consumer insights and staying competitive with other food brands. And Heineken's one of the first business customers to use this functionality, basically helping it boost productivity and all that. And it's like this, you know, large language model approach. But interesting that it's making its way into food and beverage. And I don't know, before long, we might be all seeing things that we didn't think we'd see before, partially, you know, due to AI. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I want to give one more shout out to a show, which is Beer Sessions Radio, one of our longest running and most popular shows. Jimmy Carbone does that. And he was in the studio this week. I saw him in the studio, but he also just released an episode about Transmitter Brewing, which is a New York-based brewery that's celebrating its 10-year anniversary. So as always, we have a lot of different kinds of content for you all at HRN. And I have to give one more plug to the fundraising campaign we're doing. And now we're only doing, we had our kind of broad look at trying to get people engaged by giving away tickets to a concert and dinner for two in a variety of cities, which we are done with that. It closed this week. I'm going to announce the winners on this show on Friday. So tune in. It's going to be at 2:00 Eastern on Friday afternoon. I'm going to announce the winners from seven cities. And then the eighth city, Nashville, we are still working with Charity Buzz. I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes. But if you go to charitybuzz.com and search for Maggie Rose or HRN or Heritage Radio Network, you'll see this. This is we have 6 days left in this auction, and you can bid to get two night stay at the Russell Hotel, which is an awesome hotel in Nashville, dinner for two at Blue Aster, which is a renowned restaurant in Nashville, and VIP experience at Brooklyn Bowl Nashville with Maggie Rose, who, if you were listening to my conversation with her last Friday, she's amazing. She's a great singer, songwriter, entertainer. You get two tickets to her show at Brooklyn Bowl on May 10th, VIP guests. So you get backstage tour, meet and greet with Maggie, premium seating, that sort of stuff. So if you want to support education programs here at HRN and support what we're doing, and also maybe have an amazing weekend in Nashville, two nights at a hotel, dinner for two, and two tickets to the Maggie Rose show on May 10th. That is all within reach. Check out charitybuzz.com and look at Maggie Rose or Heritage Radio or HRN. You'll be able to find it. Okay, so my guest today was brought to us by one of our interns, Jess Gingrich, and we had a conversation along with H. Conley, who helps run our internship program on the education side, and suggested that we chat with Alex. And I'm really excited to have Alex Ketchum here, and we'll let Alex kind of tell us what she's up to. Hey, Alex.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
It's nice to have you, and thanks for joining. Alex, tell us a little bit about, I might be in the minority. I said at the beginning of the show and when I first started that I'm kind of new to the food world, but I'm learning. And that's part of what I'm here to do on this show is like talk to people and learn about the food world. I did not know that there was a queer food conference until it was brought up to me by my colleagues, Jess and H. So really cool. I understand it's a hybrid conference on queer food and drink, and it's going to happen the 27th and 28th. That is almost all the information that I want to provide because I want you to tell us about it. And I guess maybe start with like, where did this come from and how did, what's your background and how did you get to be organizing this?
Yeah, for sure. So it makes sense you hadn't heard of it before because it's the first year it's ever happening. So it's happening at Boston University as part of Boston University's food studies and gastronomy programs. So that's the in-person component, but everything is going to be live streamed to people who are registered for the virtual component. And then there's some talks that are happening in a virtual format that will be projected into the physical conference. The conference came about because I was giving a guest talk actually at BU talking about my work on queer feminist restaurant history. And the director of the program, Megan J. Elias, said, "Hey, what about having a queer food conference?" So I think initially we thought, oh, maybe it'll be the small thing. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing. And we've produced a cookbook related to the conference. We're partnering with Big Queer Food Fest, as well as with Rebel Rebel in Somerville to have a wine night, like a queer wine night. And we're working with groups like the Queer Food Foundation and Prism Comics and all these different great folks, All She Wrote Books, to kind of make this much bigger thing than we first imagined.
And what is your goal coming out of this conference? And thank you for saying that it was the first time. I knew that it was the first year, but I feel slightly less out of the loop. So I appreciate you clarifying that this is the first year. So what do you hope to accomplish with this conference?
Yeah, I think we have a couple of goals. One is a lot of times people ask us saying, what is queer food? And so a lot of the folks presenting at our conference all have their own definition. So it's really exciting to see how farmers and chefs and chocolate makers and scholars and journalists are all taking up this question of what is queer food in different ways and how food can be queer. I think they're slightly different questions. So one is this kind of like intellectual approach with the conference, but it's also a really nice way for people to network and make other connections with people who are thinking about food in this way. And so we want to bring together people from a variety of fields all interested in this topic. So I'm also excited about the social components, the kind of chats that happen in between panels and workshops.
What is your background and how did you come to this?
Yeah, so I'm an assistant professor at McGill University in Montreal, though I'm originally from Southern California. And I do queer studies and feminist studies, and I'm a historian. And so from my academic path, I spent about 12 years working on a project about the history of feminist cafes, restaurants, and coffee houses in the US and Canada that were founded primarily by lesbians and queer women. So I'd been thinking about queerness and food and feminist identity for quite a lot of time. And I also just really enjoy kind of bringing people together from inside and outside of the community and working with different community partners. So that's kind of the other component of why I wanted to make a conference.
Really cool. Can you give us, like, for the people who are watching or listening who are food people, like what kinds of topics could people expect to be covered? Maybe just like a couple of things that you're looking forward to or something that relates to food in a way that we might not expect.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, I recommend people go to our website, queerfoodconference.com. And the schedule is really explicit about what events are happening, who's speaking, and so forth, with descriptions of the panels. But for example, we're approaching food from a variety of perspectives. So there's events of talks about potlucks and food sharing for community building. There's a panel talking about agriculture and queerness on the land. There's work around HIV/AIDS and nourishing well-being. We have workshops led by queer professionals within the food industry, including chocolate makers. We have a panel on non-binary botany. So thinking about kind of queer identity within human populations, but also thinking about different identities within the plant world and botany. And then we have different kinds of workshops on very practical things about how to write about queer food, self-publishing, and stuff like that. So I'm really excited. And then in addition to the panels and workshops, each morning we're actually all going to eat breakfast together. And the first breakfast is catered by Life Alive in Boston and the second one by Diesel Cafe in Boston. And so we're having folks who work at those eateries talk us through why they made the food that they did, how that speaks to their own ideas of queer food. And it also helps people both from within Boston and people coming from out of town to kind of connect to some of the queer Boston food scene.
I was going to ask if there was food involved, because I assumed that there would be food involved.
Yeah, we're having the breakfast. And then we also have nighttime activities that are organized by our community sponsors or partners, actually. So there's the wine event with Rebel Rebel Wild Child. So that's like an additional event where people can kind of connect with this local feminist and queer wine shop wine bar. And then on Sunday night, Big Queer Food Fest is hosting this kind of dinner with a few different celebrity chefs from the queer food world, such as Tiffany Faison and Kareem and a few others. So that's also a separated event. So for folks in the Boston area who want to be involved but weren't able to get one of the in-person tickets for the conference, you can still register for the wine event or the Big Queer Food Fest event. Like, those are separate ticketing. So we're really excited to bring people from both the festival conference and from outside for those events.
That's really cool. Thanks for explaining that. And I guess how much of this conference for you is about building kind of community with among, I guess, anyone who identifies within like the queer food world, and how much of it is about, I guess, other topics? Does that make sense? Like, how much of it is a networking thing to show people that this is, you know, a community that has a cohesive kind of place to be together, and how much of it is about, like, you know, learning and all that?
I think both. I think part of it is that when I was initially doing my kind of work on feminist restaurants, lesbian restaurants, queer restaurants, I got a lot of pushback from folks saying, is there a place for this within academic work? Is this something that should be studied seriously? And so I think in having this conference, it kind of allows for a little bit of like formality within that field. So for folks who are interested in doing academic work or journalistic work, I think it can show like, hey, there's actually other people doing this. There's a body of literature, there's scholarship. I think on the other side, it's also just wonderful to connect people from a lot of different professions and community organizations together so they can learn from each other. So I'm really excited to see how people are approaching these topics from their own perspectives. And we have presenters from all over the world, both virtually and in person. And we also have attendees from all around the world. So it's also really interesting to see how people are taking up these questions in like their different cultural and geographic contexts as well.
Nice. I have a question just in terms of how you think about this. I guess all the topics that you're covering and the way you think about what's happening within the food world, are there topics that are being covered at the conference or things that you're thinking about that are particularly top of mind with regard to the food community and the queer food community? Is anything like jumping out?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we've seen a lot recently in kind of discussions, especially around the restaurant industry, have been these ideas of like, how can restaurants be sustainable in terms of their labor practices, economically sustainable, and also environmentally sustainable. So we definitely have people who are presenting work that's in conversation with those topics. That's also an area of research that I work on. So that's also something that I'm excited about. But I think it's also some of the themes of the conference are speaking to kind of other spaces in the food world that have gotten a lot of media attention over the past couple of years around how farmers and people in the restaurant industry can partner together, questions of, especially within the Canadian context where I live now, around kind of the colonial frameworks that we live in and how one can kind of create more social justice-ly oriented spaces within a colonial context. So there's definitely discussions kind of around Indigenous approaches to queer food. And then I just think that there's a lot of people who are taking up this topic within kind of their own realms, like I mentioned with the botanists and the chocolate makers and so forth.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. What do you think is like the most, the biggest misconception about this space or the conference, or like, what do you, is there anything you're trying to kind of like dispel or clear up or kind of address in terms of what misconceptions people might have?
Yeah, overall, we haven't had like very much pushback or misconceptions so far. I mean, maybe we'll see it as it gets more publicity.
I hope there aren't any.
I think that we did an event in partnership with the Oxford Food Symposium, kind of a kickoff event. It was a virtual panel event that we did as part of their kitchen table series. And some folks hadn't been aware that queer is a term that has been reclaimed by many people within the LGBTQ+ community. So someone thought that we were being insulting or using a pejorative term, even though everyone on the panel and involved identifies as queer. So I think that could be one misconception. I think the other thing is, this is something that people who are interested in the food world, who do food studies, who do food journalism, oftentimes have to kind of push back on. But sometimes there's this way that working on food is seen as something that's not serious, despite the way that food is so tied to culture and politics and society. Plus, we all have to eat to survive. So I think those are some of the misconceptions that we might be grappling with. But so far, the response has been really positive and enthusiastic, which has been really great.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't expect that there was a lot of pushback. I'm just like, I feel like when you launch a new conference or a new gathering or any sort of content, you have to kind of like figure out, are you in terms of programming, you know, are you trying to like address things that help build community and move forward? Are you trying to kind of like figure out where there are places that might need clarification? I think it's really interesting and a really cool overlap. Why food for you? Because it sounds like you study more broadly than food.
Yeah. So part of it had to do with when I was an undergrad. We were discussing before we went on the air that I went to Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. And I was really involved with organizing the school's organic farm. I'd started a living community program house where students live called Farmhouse, which was interested in food politics. It still exists today. And I was doing feminist studies and history, and I wanted to kind of bring these topics together. And I was really interested in kind of the labor dynamics of who was doing cooking within kind of family units, unpaid cooking, and kind of the gendered dynamics of that work. So that's kind of what brought me to some of these questions. And I also had visited the restaurant Bloodroot Feminist Vegetarian Restaurant in Bridgeport, Connecticut, that's existed since 1977. Last month, they had their 47th anniversary, which is pretty wild. So I've just always been really excited to think about labor, how you can try to create a community space and support it sustainably in ways that reflect the community's values, what kind of compromises you have to make and stuff like that. So I also really enjoy eating and I enjoy brewing and cooking and baking in my own spare time. So I think these are some of the things that kind of drive me to think about food, both within my professional life, but also in my personal life and hobbies and activities.
That's really cool. Yeah. Cooking brings us all together, right? In a way that a lot of things don't, you know?
For sure.
I had a question. I want to go back, and maybe this is too big of a question, but you started talking about like the kind of feminist and queer food history. Like it, where does your thinking on that start? Like how far back does it go? Is there a point in time where that becomes something that is you know, a milestone that starts to like pave the way to where we are now?
Yeah. Okay. So there's kind of a couple of starting points you can pick. So for my book Ingredients for Revolution, where I looked at the history of the American feminist restaurants, I started from 1972 because that's when the first feminist restaurant in the United States that I could find, Mother Courage, was founded in New York City. But there were kind of women's tea rooms and kind of women-run tea shops before that. But this was kind of part of 1970s feminist activism. 1972 is when I kind of start that narrative. But I also, a couple of years ago, curated an exhibit that's still available for folks to check out online on the historicalcookingproject.com. So historicalcookingproject.com. And it's about like, what are queer cookbooks? How is a queer cookbook defined? You know, are you counting the work of James Beard, who is a gay man? Are you looking only at things that are explicitly marked as queer? There's all these really interesting kind of pamphlets. There's like Whoever Said a Dyke Can't Cook. There's the Butch Cookbook. Like, what do you do with things like the cookbook from Anthony from Queer Eye, you know, stuff like that. So you can start actually way earlier, looking back much further, like Alice B. Toklas's work. So Gertrude Stein's Partners cookbook, and so early 20th century as well. So, I mean, it's always difficult to kind of have an exact starting point, but I tend to look from the 20th century onward.
That's really cool. Thank you for giving us that brief history. It's probably hard to summarize in some ways. So the website for the conference is queerfoodconference.com. Are there any other resources you think that you want to point people to? You just mentioned another site, but if people want to learn more about the topic and kind of where you're going with this.
Yeah, for sure. So as part of the conference, we also produced a cookbook where we invited everyone who is attending the conference or presenting, if they want to submit a recipe and also a head note explaining how that recipe reflects their ideas on queer food. And we've made that publicly available for free. The ebook version, obviously, we can't like mail everyone in the world a free copy of the physical book. Yeah. But if you go to queerfoodconference.com and then under the cookbook tab, you can download the PDF of it. And so that's a really interesting collection of the way that people are thinking through their ideas of like queer food. And it provides kind of like a nice taster for what the conference will be like.
That's really cool. And that's, yeah, the free to download. And it looks like there's like quite a few recipes.
Yeah. It's, I think we had more than 44 contributors for the cookbook itself. Yeah. And we're hoping to also be making an anthology. So check back in with me in about a year when it's hopefully done. But yeah, so a few other projects with that. And then in terms of just kind of like larger resources on queerness and food. So one of the great things, one of our community partners for this event, All She Wrote Books, they're like actually both in person and online selling a lot of texts written by the people who are presenting at this conference. John Birdsall has a book coming out later this year called What is Queer Food? Or something like that is the title, but he's written work on James Beard as well. There's a few other books that are kind of on the horizon popping up around these questions of queer food. And yeah, so it's pretty exciting time. A lot of the kind of work around kind of queer food and drink culture had been really focused on kind of the bar scene, which is important, but there's so much more than just the bar scene.
Got it. Well, thank you for sharing that and good luck. And so assuming this is all successful, which it will be, what else do you want to do? I mean, will there be, it sounds like, I'm sure there'll be content created and shared at the conference, but what else is on your radar in terms of how you build out this community?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, people are already like, when's the next conference going to be? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, let me get through this weekend. Because, you know, as the organizer, I'm very excited, but also, you know, a little stressed. Yeah. I know it's going to be exhausting, but also very gratifying and exciting. So we've talked about maybe having a future edition of the conference. Give us a couple years to make that happen. But maybe for that one to happen in Montreal, where I'm located. So my co-organizer, as I mentioned, Megan J. Elias, is at Boston. So that's why we're doing Boston this year. So hopefully the conference might move around in the future, and maybe also other people who are keen might take it up and, carry the torch forward for us. And then we're hoping it. I won a grant recently to support this anthology. So we're working with cartoonists, chefs, and authors to create an anthology. It's basically about 35 people working together to create an anthology around different themes around queer food. So more about that within the coming year or so when we can give you an update about that. But I'm really excited about the anthology. So those are kind of the two main things that are on the horizon for us.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thanks for taking time. I know you're busy prepping. So appreciate you coming on and sharing this. I'm looking forward to seeing how the conference goes and glad we got connected.
Thank you so much. And for folks who are listening to this and are like, oh, I really want to come, is it too late? So while the in-person tickets are sold out, you can still come to the virtual conference. As long as you register by 11 a.m. Eastern time on Friday, you can get in. We'll get you those Zoom links. And then if you're in the Boston area and want to join us for the wine event or the Big Queer Food Fest, there's links to those on our website too. So you can join us in person for those.
That's excellent. And I have to ask you before I let you go, what was your last best bite?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's always such a hard question. I don't know. I had some really fantastic chocolatey mocha ice cream the other day. So
nice.
I was pretty excited about our spring weather. And then, of course, it snowed this morning. So, but I got that taste of spring.
That's great. You're our second guest in a row who said ice cream. So I think that's where we are in the year.
Awesome.
I appreciate you taking the time. And good luck with the conference. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. And we'd love to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye. And everyone listening, we'll be back on Friday afternoon, 2 p.m. If you're listening on the podcast, we'll release it shortly thereafter. So thanks, everybody, as always, for tuning in. See you soon.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.